Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Allianz. Supporting all 32 counties through the Allianz Leagues.
A grain, all right.
It's going to tip the scale. Just remember that.
There's a small bit of a needle there.
Now, come on, Mayo. You've got to get Andy Moran into the game.
Listen between them, and now they're really roaring.
And I can tell you, that there won't be a cold milk to declare for at least a week.
So finally, we actually have some football matches to talk about. Hello, everyone. You're very welcome to the Irish Examiner Gaelic Football Show, sponsored by Allianz. My name is Paul Rouse, and I'm joined by the former Armagh footballer, Oisín McConville, and by the former Kerry footballer, Paul Galvin. So straight into the football. Paul, you're very welcome. What did you think of Kerry?
Thanks, Paul. Hi, Oisín. I thought Kerry were great. I didn't see everything, but what I did see, you know, it was what you. It's probably what we were all hoping to see. I felt there was a bit of anger in them. It was a kind of an angry display, and there was no mercy in it. So I thought that was good to see, and you'd be hoping to see that every day now from here on in. But certainly there was loads of energy and loads of, I suppose, that kind of an anger in them. I thought that was. That was good, and of course, look, some of the stuff up front was brilliant.
Last week when we were on, it was 2 weeks ago now, Oisín was saying that he thought Kerry were soft, that they had a soft centre the last couple of years. Do you see something different now? Would you agree with that analysis, first of all, and second of all, do you think it has changed?
Nice, easy introduction into the morning for me anyway on a Monday morning. I don't think Kerry people, adjectives are always tricky when you go describing a team, and that, like, you know, I don't know. I don't think you can argue too hard with that from the point of view that we've been falling short kind of consistently, really, like, and you know, you could make arguments about it, and, you know, go batting against that kind of an opinion, but there's really not a lot you can say really to fight back. As such, like, you know, no one likes that type of description. No team likes it. No individual likes it. No manager likes it. And but at the same time, Kerry have fallen short, I suppose, too many times. And you're open to all sorts of questioning then, and doubts, and you're what you're made of in terms of a desire for winning, and your mentality and all that will come into question. Like, and so I'm afraid we kind of have to suck it up. Whatever's going at the moment, we have to take on the chin and carry. You know, that's the way I see it.
Oisín, did you see something different about Kerry on Saturday?
I never said Kerry was off. I said that Kerry didn't have enough bad eggs in defence. Now, when Paul was playing, most of them were bad eggs. I suppose the point that I wanted to make was that if Kerry are going to win in All-Ireland, are they going to win it with the defence they've had? Take Peter Crowley out of it. So I watched Kerry at the weekend, and the first thing I think of is, wow. You know, look at the attacking football that Kerry play. Now, the question that I would ask Paul Galvin would be, what is Kerry's DNA? Is that important? When I think of Kerry now, I think of the Monaghan game they played last year in the league when the league came back. And they played two guys who basically played as auxiliary defenders, and there didn't seem to be any of that. Now, Kerry filter back like most teams do, but Kerry are obviously very good on the front foot. I think last year they thought a little bit too much about it. They had Dublin in their sights and they're thinking, how do we go about beating Dublin? I think at this stage that, you know, if you want to think about Kerry DNA, what Kerry football is all about, then you think, and again, I don't know if this stuff is really important now, but I think if Kerry are going to win an All-Ireland, they're going to win it playing the way they played at the weekend, rather than trying to overthink it and play the way they wanted to play last year, and it didn't really work for them. So that's three attempts Kerry have had now. So when Peter Keane came in, fairly similar to what we watched at the weekend, fell short. Last year, obviously, fell dramatically short playing defensive football. And this year, again, it's only the first game, and it was Galway. And we have to put all these things into perspective. But I'm just wondering if Paul would tell us how important DNA or how important the identity of this team is, and what is the identity of this team?
Yeah. I suppose you raise lots of very important points there, Oisín, and lots of very valid points, and lots of points that I've no doubt Kerry are examining themselves, right? And are, I would say, and I would hope, probably trying to revisit or rediscover that DNA, because it is important. It's important in every county. What is it in Kerry, to answer your question? I don't know. I think when a Kerry team are taking lots of solos and lots of hops around the middle third of the field and out of defence, I think it's not a great sign. I think no plays on the ball. If there is a DNA, Oisín, and at the minute, and I'll get to the set, you raise a couple of valid points. And I think at the minute, DNA is struggling and is lost for the squeeze and the time pressure that are on managers and coaches and teams and operations. And I felt this for 6 months. And it was a big factor why I came out of Wexford in the end, because I felt trying to drive identity, trying to create spirit, trying to build a DNA over a couple of seasons, I felt that opportunity was gone with the time pressure and all the regulations and restrictions and etc., etc. So at the minute, and I would say Kerry last year, I think DNA might have went for everybody last year, and teams went, because probably I was in the position for 6 or 7 months and I thought, what is going to get performances here? What is going to ensure you're competitive? Because you're going to get no time in the training ground. You're going to get no opportunity really to do the things. I felt I had no opportunity to do the things I wanted to do. And I gave it as long as I could to see what the outlook would look like in terms of sessions, in terms of when it would begin, when it would end. Travel, time management, all that time pressure. So I think last year was an aberration from the point of view of DNA. I think DNA went out the window. I think what's DNA in general in Kerry? I think probably, for me anyway, little or no players coming out of defence with the ball, getting it up the field, moving it on quickly. That leads to the second point, I think, is how you're moving it on, Oisín. And people talk about the hand pass and there being too much hand passing. I just look at passing and the quality of passing and what the quality of passing is like. I think probably in general in the game, the standard of passing is not what it could be. I think Kerry possibly have fallen into a trap in recent years maybe not taking care of the ball the way they should. Why? Because teams probably are sitting off now, and there's not a need in the game to take care of the ball as you would have maybe say 10 years ago when we were playing, and there was a bit more man and man stuff. Your passing had to be better. Your passing had to be more accurate. It had to be fast. It had to be off the ground. Like, there's an amount of ball on the ground. I think Kerry put too much ball along the ground, or certainly did last year, and that would be a DNA thing for me. But look, I think in general, Oisín, to give them their dues, I think you raise a very valid point. I think at the minute, the DNA and the identity stuff for this last 12 months, I think it has taken a back seat. I think it took a back seat last year with Kerry through necessity as much as anything else. And I'm hoping that, you know, Sunday last was a maybe a little bit of a rediscovery of the heads up, no plays, play forward, that kind of stuff that I would look for, and we all probably would look for. But the game also has, when teams sit off nowadays anyway, I think that old Kerry style of play that would have been probably heads up, play forward, backs not solo on or hopping the ball, I think with teams dropping off, that kind of play isn't that possible as much anymore. Sorry now to make it that long-winded, but...
Kerry are playing Dublin next weekend. If you were playing for Kerry, how would you approach this game?
If I was playing for Kerry against this Dublin side, I suppose... I don't know. I mean, I was looking recently at a video of Brian Fenton, highlights of Brian Fenton. What a player. Absolutely superb player. And I watched a collage or a highlights reel, of 11 scores. I think there was 3 goals and maybe 8 points or something like that over various games. Outstanding player. Wasn't a single tackle. In the 11 clips, there wasn't a single tackle made on him. There wasn't even a single player near him, actually. And that's testament to his athleticism, his ability, his mindset. Because I listen to the guy speak, and I love listening to the guy speak. I almost, when I listen to him speak, I say to myself, I wish he was from Kerry. Because he speaks of the game with such enthusiasm and such love. People compare him a bit to Jacko. And he is like Jacko from the point of view of how he talks about the game. Jacko talks about the game like a kid. Fenton talks about the game like a kid with this enthusiasm that I think is a massive advantage. I've said in the past, like, enthusiasm is the best form of fitness that there is. Like, if you love what you're doing, he loves football. And I love listening to him talk about the game. I love watching him, and I love listening to him talk about the game. But I watched those clips, and I felt, my God, no. I'd be disappointed. And this was against every type of opposition. There was a bit of Meath, there was a bit of Kildare, there was a bit of Tyrone, there was a bit of Kerry, there was a bit of Mayo. If I was on the field, I was looking at that clip thinking, if I was on the field for those games and he went through the field, ran through us like that, and I didn't get near him and I didn't make his life extremely difficult. Because that was my job with Kerry, like a part of the time. Like, we played O'Sheen a couple of times. Geezer was middle of the field. Paul McGrain was middle of the field. Like, I think that's another factor with Brian as well, maybe, in the middle field, the middleman at the minute. I look back when, it's right to be looking back to, but like, you could Paul McGrain and Geezer, Tony McEntee, John Toll, Kevin Walsh and Sean O'Donnell. You look at John Galvin, John Kwan, Nicholas Murphy, Graham Canty, Kieran Whelan in Dublin. The Tyrone boys were serious units. Hughes around the middle of the field, and the McGinley around the midfield. Huge number of really big, midfielders. I probably think there probably isn't that number of them at the minute. But the other thing is, then look, if I was on the field, certainly I'd be taking a role in terms of making it, as I normally did, make it extremely difficult for the opposition midfield, because that meant Dara get a platform. Get Dara playing, you have a huge chance of winning the game. So if I'm on this Kerry team, I'm saying, Jesus, give David Bourne the best possible chance. Give. You know, and the other thing is, look, I think there's only one man midfields anymore. Like, you don't really see the combinations anymore. You don't see the 8 and 9s anymore. You see an 8, really. You look at Mayo's midfield, you'd say, now it's Dermot O'Connor and Loftus. But up to this, it's been kind of like, or Matty Ryan, it's been an 8. And it could be anybody at 9. And that's probably been a change in the middle of the field as well, in that there's kind of not that much of a midfield combination as one singular kind of dominant midfielder. But certainly if I was in this team, I'd be trying to make it really difficult for Dublin midfielders so that our midfield could at least break even. And if you have a dominant number 8 in, like a Dara, you've got to give him the best possible chance to play. And that was just something I seen recently there of Brian Fenton, and it was a two-minute clip of 6 or 7 different teams. There was 11 scores and there wasn't a single tackle. I think that's something probably you'd be looking at.
I think that sort of I might have went at a roundabout way to make my point on Kerry and you know, the individuals or stoppers. But I think that is the point there, Paul. You know, that we've been talking about over the last couple of weeks, is that somebody who sacrifices their game a little bit to stop a Fenton or whoever, that doesn't really matter. But I think that takes me back to a number of years ago, Finn Bars from Cork played Crokes in Dr. Crokes from Kerry in a Munster club. I think it was a semi-final. Could have even been a final, but definitely a semi-final at least. And somebody said, you really need to watch this game. Crooks scored 5:23 and it was all from play. And I thought, wow, that is unbelievable. And then I watched the game and I realised that nobody had told Finn Bars that you're allowed to tackle. And I think, you know, something similar the weekend with Galway. Like, I compare, like, imagine, like, imagine comparing the Kerry-Galway game at the weekend to the Donegal-Tyrone game. I mean, it's very difficult to make a comparison between those two games because they were both played in a completely different manner. And, you know, if you look at Donegal, how they got the win, and you look how Kerry got the win, completely different. Put those two teams together and then you've got a real conundrum then. But, you know, as far as Kerry's concerned, how did they match up against a Tyrone, a Donegal, or even, if anybody watched Dublin at the weekend, how physical they made that game. Do you know what I mean? Like, and in a game that they were fairly comfortable in, I thought, even though Roscommon, I thought, did quite well for large parts of the game, but how physical Dublin were, you know, and how much they like to make contact with the opposition. And I think that's, again, you know, like, what we do, and I don't know what we're grasping at straws in order to see, can somebody at the end of the season put it up to Dublin? We seen the template yesterday, I feel, in Hurling. I think the first thing Galway did against Limerick yesterday was they matched them physically, and then they developed their game, and then they played their own style. They got some of their better players on the ball, and I think that's the template that you have to use against Dublin. Is first and foremost, you have to match them physically. And when I talk about physically, I'm talking about athleticism, I'm talking about mobility, I'm talking about the ability to raid the hits and keep going. And I think that's the template. And I keep looking at teams and I keep wondering, are you fit first of all to match them in that way? And then, like, I'm not worried about, I wouldn't be worried about, if I was from Kerry, I wouldn't be worried about their ability to rip that Dublin defence apart. I wouldn't be worried about that. But in order to get that, you have to get a foothold in the thing and you have to match them physically. And I suppose that's the conundrum, and that's what I'd be thinking about, because we all want somebody to match the Dubs. We all want somebody to put it up to them and make them at least work very hard for what they have. And that's what Kerry did 2 years ago. You know, you're right, Paul. Last year was a bit of an aberration for everybody, probably. But at the end of the day, Dublin still came through, you know, and won another All-Ireland. I'm just thinking, you know, how do we get a team to match them physically and have the ability to knock them over? So Kerry have the thing at the end of the rainbow, which is the ability to win the game and the ability to do what they did at the weekend and put up the scores and all that. But have they got the ability to match them with mobility, athleticism and physicality first?
Yeah, it's a huge point. And it's like, you'd hate to make it about fitness with Dublin. And it's almost a disservice to them to make it about fitness, but it is a massive point that has to be addressed for whoever the team is that will match them. You have to be at least as fit, if not fitter. And I think a Kerry team that's as fit, I think, would beat them. Have we been over the last number of years? I'm not sure. And you know, the other point, Oisin, on that is the dirty work. And the stuff that you described is a bit like the stuff I described there earlier regards tracking a run. And that has to be prescribed. Like, I was very lucky, like, in that I love that kind of type of work. It came naturally to me. But I was also directed. It was prescribed to me. It was given to me. I was told X, Y, and Z. Tracking runners, middle of the field, you get around the breaks, you make sure you clear ground, win it if you can, and you make sure whoever wins it have a very hard time making a play of it. And that work was very much prescribed to me, and I think that's a factor too. Like, you know,
did you enjoy playing football?
Well, I loved that part. I absolutely loved it around the middle third, and I absolutely loved tracking runners. Tracking a man on the ball. I loved it. I love tracking a midfielder, or I love tracking a halfback. Excuse me. I love tracking a halfback. early on in my career, I was a bit annoyed by halfbacks going up the field, and I probably would have done a bit of handling of them to try and prevent them from doing it. But eventually, you know, that wasn't fair, or I was almost ducking the challenge in a way. And eventually I said, this is great, because if he does go and I get him down at the other end and dispossess him, it'll be massive for the team. And my most enjoyable part of the game was that opportunity where a midfielder might break away from Dara, and you save that, you save the day, but you see it. First of all, you see him go, then you get there and you stop him or you slow him. I love doing that, and I loved it. I loved the rough and tumble around the middle of what the field around breaks. So that's why when I saw that clip of Brian, I looked for the guy coming from behind to track him, trail him, tackle him, stop him, and I just didn't see it. And I'm wondering, is it, it's power and pace with Fenton for sure, but then I'm wondering, where's the prescription of the guy on the opposition team to say, well, look, if he gets away from my, say, whoever the midfielder was, Dave Moore and Colm Kavanagh, one of the Mayo lads, you've got to be there ready to cover him, because you get a 2v1 with a halfback or whatever, and it's score territory. So they were the things that I enjoyed most about the game.
Did you enjoy football, Oisin?
Yeah, I love football, and I suppose the big thing for me was that I played a lot of my football actually in the half forward line, but it's fair to say that I would be probably a different player than Paul was. When I seen the halfback go, I let him go and hope that somebody else would take care of him.
Did a bit of pointing.
But I remember Paul Grimley, one of the first things Paul Grimley did in 02. I remember the first league game we played, and he said, listen, I don't question your ability in any way. I question how much you're willing to work. And I suppose that was a kick up the hole for me to go on actually improve that side of my game. I wouldn't say it was anywhere near what Paul was in regards to that, or as unselfish in the way I played the game. But I suppose we were both different types of players. I suppose what I loved about football was you weren't on it every day. Like, I wasn't on it every day, but the days you were on it, I just want the ball, like, you know what I mean? Like, I would have loved to have a ball to myself, you know, whenever I was really on it. But I suppose I enjoyed it, and I think I played in an era where it was probably easy enough to enjoy it. And again, we didn't have unbelievable success like Paul's team did, but we had enough that it kept us interested all the way through. So, I love football, and I miss... The only aspect of football I miss now is just the games themselves, the big games. Probably not, to be honest, not even the league games. You know, going to a championship ground and realising that you're not involved and haven't been involved for so long. I mean, that was the one thing that I missed. I definitely missed about it. I didn't miss any of the other stuff. I didn't miss the training or the slog or anything like that there. Some people loved that, but I didn't.
You know, you raised the point there, Oisin, that I think decided an All-Ireland final a couple of years ago, in that your role as a wing forward and your game, we were different players, but you were, you know what I mean? You were also a 15, which I don't think probably, I played there at minor and 21 level and a club level, and I was a scoring forward for a good part of my career, but like at inter-county level at the top end, I would never have been a 15, whereas you were an inside 15, you know, and won the top 15s in the country. And the other interesting point about that, Oisin, is the free-taking. I remember 3 or 4 years ago, one of the All-Ireland finals between Dublin and Mayo came down to a free, and Killian O'Connor and Dean Rock were the free takers, and their role in the game in terms of work rate was very different. Killian, very honest player, huge appetite for work and a lot of aggression, and I you know, you'd admire it in him, but he may have been too honest that day, and he ended up tracking back way back the field to his own goal. And I remember him making a tackle in his own small square at one point. And late on in that game, a free dropped short late in that final. And in the same final, I'm sure, Dean Rock popped a free to win it. And Dean Rock is another man with a huge work rate and as a 15. But in that game, he really didn't go beyond 45 or 65. He did all his work up high close to goal, and he didn't go back the field at all. And I just think, especially with free takers, like probably... If you're young, it's different, maybe, if you're a young free taker. But if you're an older one, I think you're probably more inclined to say, And if you're a scoring forward, and generally you might be more inclined to say, okay, look, I'll risk one or two here because I know if it comes back or late in the game, I know if I get a ball, it's going to be score territory and I want to have the legs to do it. And the free taking one was just a factor, I thought, in an All-Ireland final there a couple of years back.
Yeah, good point. I think that was the day that they kicked 18 out of 19 between them. I think they had 100% record up until Killian kicked that one short.
I didn't realise that, but I remember looking at Killian that day and his work rate was taking him all over the field, whereas Dean Rocks was only taking him so far. And
he was inside the 50, basically. He was
it looked that way to me, and it wasn't that he was shirking it or anything like that, but it looked like, you know, that he was leaving it maybe to the boys down the field more so than what Killian was, maybe, you know.
There was an interesting thing happened at the weekend. If we talk about innovation in coaching,
I was never kicking frees, basically, is my point. I was never in danger. I could run and keep running. I wasn't going to ever have to worry about kicking a late free.
I want to talk about the Tyrone Donegal match, and in the second half of that game, when Tyrone had a player sent off, as they chased the game late on, Niall Morgan left the Tyrone goal and played in midfield for a couple of kickouts late in that game. Is there something changing with goalkeepers in Gaelic football, or can you see that happening where the idea almost of a fly keeper is going to come more and more?
No, oh, Jesus, this is tough. This is a tough one for me because I watched Rory Beggan go past Rory Beggan run past Conor McManus yesterday into the full forward line, and I thought, what is going on? I like innovation, but I also like the goalkeeper just to stay where he is. I took me a long time to get my head around boys coming up and kicking frees. That took me a long time, and I still struggle with it sometimes. But I tend not to talk about it, because if you talk about stuff like that, you're perceived as being a dinosaur. But if there's not a forward that can kick the ball over the bar from a free inside 50 yards on the Tyrone team or the Monaghan team, then I don't know. There's something seriously wrong with the way we're coaching people. But I understand, I suppose the counter argument for that is you watch Alisson coming up yesterday, heading the ball into the net, and you think, okay, that's going to happen someday in the GAA. But for all of that, all of those possibilities, a keeper's a keeper. Niall Morgan might be slightly different in that he plays midfield for his club, and that he might fancy himself out around there. But maybe when you're down a player, you're chasing a game, you sort of try anything. But other than that, I don't see, you know, what Rory or Niall Morgan or that is going to bring to the party, you know, going forward. And look at the Rory one actually come back to bite them a number of years ago, if you remember. The All-Ireland semi-final when, you know, we were trying to retain possession and they ended up losing it. So people can call me a dinosaur if they want, but I'm not a particular fan of it.
Because Dublin did it in the last minutes of the 2019 final when they were down a player as well and Cluxton went to full-back and they pushed a player all the way up the field. But this was different. This was Niall Morgan going out to try and pick his space. And actually, the second time he did it, it probably cost score to Donegal, because he actually didn't go far enough when he did go. He got kind of caught in no man's land. So, but it will be interesting to see. Did you see anything in either Tyrone or Monaghan, Tyrone or Donegal that was different this year, Oisin?
I think, you know, there's more of an emphasis, and I think Tyrone are a work in progress. I think there's more of an emphasis on hitting the full forward line. And I think when they add McShane into that mix, that changes the whole complex of that team. I also think that they were backing their defenders a little bit more. You know, there was a little bit more one-to-one. They weren't relying on, like, they don't have a Colin Kavanagh. That role is a very defined or prescriptive role. One of the roles that Paul was talking about. And I don't think they have a player who's going to be able to fit that mould in the exact way that he did before. But I'm not sure if if Fergal, Logan and Brian do want that to happen. But did I see enough of them? Yeah, I've seen loads, and there's loads of potential there in Tyrone. And I think, you know, I fear for Armagh playing them next week. As far as Donegal is concerned, it's more of the same, except for they obviously have a massive bit between their teeth now. They look like an angry team. They look like a team with a point to prove. But look, they're a little bit like Kerry in that, you know, we're not really going to find out until August, you know, whether, you know, there's enough in them to win in all Ireland. But look, those two teams are far and away, I think, the best two teams in Ulster.
Yeah, I think, you know, the works in progress, Oisín, is an interesting way to put it, and it's true. And I think it's going to be tricky for the works in progress this year again. You know, the teams that have the new management in, I think probably, you mentioned Galway earlier, like, and how to judge Galway. Like, I think Warwick is probably is suffering a little bit for the timing of his introduction and the whole new situation that he's in, and it being a work in progress, Galway being a work in progress. You think of the work that he could have got done with the Corrigan boys to integrate them into that side. Well, in my experience anyway, that time was gone. That time was lost to integrate any kind of coaching or any kind of, you know, a new body or a new... And I wonder, you know, I think Tyrone probably have worked... They certainly worked quietly anyway, which is a positive up to this point. And I do wonder what the quality of the work has been like for everybody, having been on the inside and feeling that, you know, all the time pressures and the restrictions. That I wonder what it's like for the works in progress. I think that'll be an interesting thing to observe going forward for the new setups.
Yeah, that's a good point on the management end of things. Like if you come in as a manager, like it's very unforgiving now. You know, management is very, very unforgiving. And you think of the teams we're in it, the team restrictions, the game restrictions. I mean, by this stage, most teams would have played an auxiliary competition in their own province. They would be through their league and they'd be going into a championship with a guaranteed back door. They don't have that. So, like, we judge teams on, like, a lot of people will judge teams on the face of it yesterday on, like, they'll judge Mickey Hart on the fact that, you know, he got beaten by a point. They'll judge Fergal, Logan and Brian Doyle because everybody expects a bounce when a new management come in. Look, it's simple. One day you're Pep Guardiola, the next day you're Sam Allardyce. That's just the way it is. And I think that the thing about inter-county management now is that there was more of a turnover of managers this year than I actually thought there would be. And I think, you know, those guys who everybody is trying to hit the ground running, I think it's more difficult than it's ever been to do that. I mean, what do you know about your players? A lot of players, you know, you're taking a chance on them. You're looking at what they're doing in training. You're thinking, yeah, he can definitely do a job for me. And whether they can or not, you know, and I think if you look back on the weekend and you look back at the amount of substitutions that were made in the first 25 minutes of the game, I think that statistic will be through the roof as regards where we have been before in the first league game.
Paul, can we just talk about that issue of management for a start? And I want to bring you back to going into the Wexford job. Will you talk us through the interview for that Wexford job?
It was the interview, really. I was keen on, I suppose. I had just been out of the game for 4 years. I'd been looking at the game hard and studying the game hard, and I just felt on a personal level, on a personal development point of view, just from a football point of view, certainly, and just on a personal point of view as well, I hadn't done an interview, and I couldn't remember my last interview. And I was just interested as to the process, and I was interested as to where I might, how I might get on with the interview, and I had watched a lot of Wexford, I had watched a lot of Division 4, and I had seen a good bit of Wexford, and a good bit of the Wexford club scene. So I loved it. I loved the interview process. I really enjoyed it. And I was really interested for feedback from the people involved on the committee. And that's really what I was seeking was, you know, see, I said, I'm going to present now X, Y, and Z. And I'm going to put it to these people and I'll see how it lands. And that was for my own development as a fella interested in football who wanted to get into coaching and who wanted to not get into it, but get back into it, because I had done a number of years at schools level. So I said, you know, that's the way to go. Now bring your stuff to the table and see what kind of feedback you get, and take it from there.
And when you started, what were the ideas that you wished to introduce that had flown from those 4 years of study? Because, like, did life as a Kerry footballer prepare you for managing Wexford?
I wouldn't have applied for it on the basis of being a former Kerry footballer, to be honest with you. And I wouldn't have ever accepted a position and I had a number of conversations with people in the winter and, you know, about various roles, and you want to know why they want to hire you, or why they want to bring you on board or hire you or work with you. And if I ever felt it was, and I've made this known, like, you know, it can't be judged upon a football career, you know, so what did it help me? I don't know. Did it help me? It probably helped me from the point of view of the committee recognised, you know, the team I played on, the look we had with success, and they said, well, you know, there's that anyway. But you know, I don't know. Then beyond that, you can't be leaning on that, basically, you know. So you have to have a bit more, I think, about you beyond that. Like,
see the school stuff, was that? Was that any preparation for inter-county? Did that give you any sort of?
It would have from the point of view that we were doing a lot with kickouts back then. Actually, like that, I felt we're still actually valuable. Actually, do you know,
what did you find the most difficult thing about inter-county management? I'm not talking about the situation we found ourselves in pandemic wise or anything like that there. I'm just talking about in general.
I suppose what was the most difficult part? There's a logistical element to management, like the management element, really, like the logistical element, the emails, the fixtures, the club stuff. So it's all that stuff. I would call it the real management stuff, like of travel, logistics, club fixtures, and I think honestly the media part of it as well. I you know, I think you need to be probably at ease with the media aspect of it, which I probably amn't, like, which is, I think you need to be probably comfortable with the media side of it. And that's probably something I wasn't as comfortable with, maybe, you know, as I should have been, you know what I mean? But anyway.
Everything that you've spoken about there, about what you wanted to do, is it's almost more what a coach does rather than what a manager does. The stuff that you didn't enjoy is the stuff that a manager kind of does. Do you think you'd have been better served going as a number two rather than as a number one? And if you were to go back again, is that the way you'd go?
I mean, we had those discussions, like, you know, myself and the chairman and the committee, and we did have that discussion about the role and a number one, number two, and all. We had that very open chat, and, you know, I did feel, you know, I suppose I would have gone in a back room. I would have gone in as a number two just as easily, you know. But we couldn't really find the combination, you know. I had done a few sessions with Kieran Deely in London, and Kieran's a Wexford man, and Kieran was, you know, in the conversation a little bit, and he, you know, being London based, it wasn't working for him, and that. Yeah, and I was more than comfortable. I was more than happy to go forward, absolutely more than happy, because I was sure about what I was bringing to the table on that side of it. So I had no issue with going forward. So I don't know what the right answer to that is. And that basically, that was basically the outline of how it happened. It was very open and transparent and honest. And I don't try to bluff people or fool people or oversell myself or undersell myself. I'm a very, very straightforward person, a very transparent person. Presented myself, and, you know, I did, it was probably, you know, ideally, I suppose I would have gone a number two, maybe, but I wasn't by any means afraid of going the number one if it came to that, you know.
Dave Howard, the Tipperary football manager, acknowledged this week that football in his county played second fiddle to hurling in Tipperary. Is it the same in Wexford?
Well, it's very much so.
And did you have difficulties dealing with the hurling management?
The hurling management? You'll have to be more specific, Paul.
Did you have difficulties dealing with the hurling manager?
The hurling manager? I had no difficulties dealing with the hurling manager until such time as he just started to interfere a little bit with my operation, Paul, to be quite honest. And I felt...
How did that work?
It worked okay. Listen, I was building a new team down there. I made a couple of decisions down there to shake the thing up a little bit, and we were starting fresh really with a young group, and I had to keep my head down, Paul, because there was a lot of stuff flying around and we needed results basically, and we started to get results, and that was enough. That was enough of an answer really for me at the time, but you know, I did feel it was a bit of interference that made my job more difficult and made the situation down there difficult. You know, very good relationship with the chairman, but you know, I think some of the things that went on probably.
What form did the interference take?
I know, you know, look, I think Davey wanted the training ground to himself. You know, he wanted ferns to himself down there. He certainly let it be known pretty early that we weren't welcome in Ferns, you know, the football side of things, because of some of the things he did. Made it clear to me that, you know, we weren't welcome in Ferns, basically. That was my take on the situation, Paul.
Okay. Division 4, though. Division 4 is fascinating. And I heard you say before, and read in your autobiography where you talk about life being a collection of experiences and how learning, well, you are the sum of your experiences. So that experience and what you take from it for your kind of personal development and your development as a sports person, what did it do for you?
Well, it was good for me, I must say, from the football point of view, in terms of the stuff I was bringing to the table. I learned a good bit, I suppose, from the point of view of dealing with people and relationships and that. There was loads in it, you know, I suppose, just to, you know, continue as I am and continue being honest and transparent and being, you know, straight up with people, like, you know, just to tidy up that issue there on the Davy and the Wexford, the hurling people, like, you know, I didn't mind a bit of chicanery. There was a bit of chicanery going on, and you know, I released a few players. He brought them into the hurling squad, to the same training ground, dressing rooms, pitches, car park, corridor, same training nights, you know, and I felt that was a bit of a statement. And I took it on the chin because, you know what, he's around a long time and Davey's a wily old fox, and he's gained a little bit of soft power there in the media that he uses quite cleverly. And I took it on the chin because we needed results and I just had to keep my head down. But you know what? Really, the thing that really annoyed me about that was the fact that he kind of made a big man of himself in the media on the back of it. And he started talking about all the respect he had for me in the media and making a kind of a virtuous man of himself on the back of it. But the reality was behind the scenes that wasn't the case at all. You know, it was actually, I felt, trying to maybe, you know, put me in the halfpenny place a little bit and put football in the halfpenny place a little bit, like. And, you know, and there was a lot of good Wexford football people down there that I think, I think there's a lot of potential down there. I do. I saw it firsthand. I believe there's the makings of a very good young team down in Wexford. I'm absolutely certain of that. There's good football people down there. But, I suppose that was a bit of an eye-opener for me in terms of the learning experience and the growth out of it, and then your next, you know, you move on to your next place, and you probably have had a good grounding there overall in terms of experience, you know.
Because a Kerry football manager would never have to deal with that issue, or even the Dublin football manager.
I'm a jewel. I'm a hurling man, Paul. I come from hurling country. I know hurling and I know hurling people. And I know that the game of hurling is full of very honest people and very good people. And I know a lot of people in Clare hurling. Funny enough, I read an article by you a number of years ago that spoke about the Clare Offaly 98 sit-in protest by the Offaly fans. You wrote an article on that. You're an Offaly man, of course. I read that article a while back. I was on the pitch for that, actually, in the 98 sit-in. I was on the pitch because the Kerry under 21 hurlers were about to play. We were there about to play our hurling final, and he sat in, and that was that game. But I was up close and personal with the Clare boys because they were my favourite hurling team, that 95 to 90, whatever, Lochnan's time. That Clare team were huge in North Kerry because they were only over the ferry, really. You know, a lot of them were close by, and we would have gone to Clare a lot. I would have played against Dalos, Clare Castle, a number of times in challenge games up in Clare Castle. And by God, skin and hair would fly, and Dalos would be on the sideline. So, like, we looked up to that Clare team. So we're a dual club, like, in Kerry. So we've dealt with the dual stuff. I've dealt with it all my career. Like, we probably have suffered for it for a number of years from the point of view that you'll go well in the hurling one year and football in the next, maybe. And you know, you kind of have to give. There's a bit of give and take, you know. So Kerry football manager, no, has no issues with dual stuff. But I suppose it's an issue in some counties. I think what Wexford have the most dual clubs of any county, actually. I think there's the ratio of dual clubs.
It's ratio, clubs. Yeah, and ratio. Yeah,
clubs,
right.
And 48. I think there's 52 clubs and 48 are dual.
So it does make it a different scenario. Whereas you see, Kieran Donaghy now goes up to Armagh, and it's a free run at what he's trying to do in as Kieran McGeaney, as a coach with Kieran McGeaney. Actually, what will Kieran Donaghy bring to Armagh?
Well, you see a lot of positivity around the place these days, and you see a lot of people talking about positivity, and it's almost a commercialized, it's almost a commodity now. Positivity is almost a commodity now, you know. But you can fake positivity, you know, like you can say, you can write on Instagram about the importance of positivity, and you can say in a talk that it's important to be positive. But optimism is a different thing. Optimism is a much more natural thing, and it's a much more powerful thing. And Kieran is a born optimist, like, you know. And I think there's huge value in that, actually. Seriously, as a coach or as a manager, like, to be naturally optimistic about what you're doing. You don't have to force positivity then, or look for positivity at all. You can accept the negativity. You can accept to say, you know, oh, that's, it's just not great now at the minute. You can be pragmatic, but you don't have to waste energy forcing positivity upon people. If you're a natural optimist, you can just say, right, oh, it's bad, or it's a problem. We just have to accept the problem because we know that it'll get better, and we'll do better, and we'll grow, and we'll be fine. But for now, sometimes you can be faced with a positive person who can force the positivity upon you, and you can deny the fact that there's a problem in front of your face because you have to paint it up with positivity. So anyway, Kieran just has this natural optimism in him that makes him, you know, he does well at things, right? He does well at things, like, he's got this thing in him where he does well, and he's success. Like, he's won a load since he's retired with Kerry with the club. He's won a load in basketball. So I think that's a valuable thing there that might be intangible. He's also sharp on the game, and he doesn't tell me everything now by any means in terms of what he's doing with our map. So I don't know exactly what he'll bring, but as a personality, I know exactly what he'll bring. On the football side of things, he'll have his ideas. I wouldn't be privy to them, to be honest with you.
Well, you can see on a football point of view, I would suggest the impact in that first penalty that Armagh won set the tone for the game yesterday. A high ball dropping into the square. The arms are out from the full forward. He bought a penalty off. We can argue whether he bought it off the football. Oisín, what did you feel about that?
Well, I thought it was a definite penalty. I thought the only problem I had with it was that we kicked one high ball in the first half and got a penalty off it, and we never bothered doing it after that. But I think, when I think of what Kieran Donaghy brings, like, you have to have, like when Benny Tierney decided to retire after 2002, Joe Kernan kept Benny Tierney around. Now, Benny did the stats, but Benny wasn't there for the stats. And we all knew that. He was there to give us a bit of a bounce in the change room. He was there for the bit of bad manners, a bit of crack. Yeah, a bit of crack before games, a bit of messing around, a bit of keeping everybody on their toes, that sort of thing. And I think when a character like him or Donaghy comes into a setup immediately, first of all, the first thing you notice is the personality. And then if you notice the personality and you realise this guy, you know, he's bubbly, he's all that sort of thing, I think it's easier to take the instruction on board. And I think, you know, like I obviously have nephews playing on that team. I don't ask them because I hated being asked when I was in that setup. I don't ask them what's going on, but I know you know they're very very they tell me he's very very adept at what he's doing. So put it like that, and he's a positive influence around the place. So I think that's as much as you can expect from somebody coming in to a dressing room that he knows nothing about. You know,
isn't it interesting with all the talk about science in Gaelic football now and strategy and planning? And I know, Paul, you say those 4 years after finishing as a Kerry footballer before you. And I know you were still playing a bit of club football and a bit of hurling, but you studied the game and you went in there. But you, both of you, speak a lot about the emotion of in the dressing room, the emotion around the team. How important is emotion to football?
Yeah, I suppose it's important to sport. Like, it's important. It's a big part of every sport. Like, I suppose you have to recognise, I suppose, that at some point it's the type of performance it gives you, you know. It depends on the sport. Say in football, you know, you get a certain... I found early in my career I was a certain type of player and I was given a certain type of performance. And then when I stepped back and I looked at my overall approach and the emotional levels and, you know, you start to use your head a little bit more and you can give a different type of performance, you know. So, like, you know, what does that mean literally in the game? You might be in the middle third of the field as a wing forward and you're stuck into breaks and you're tackling and chasing and you're tracking runners and you're trying to get the ball back. That's very emotional. You're in the middle of things. You're in the thick of things. You're in the thick of the action. You might, as you get older, you might fake going into the breakdown. And whereas, say early on, I would have gone into every break the same way and done the same thing. And then I realised that it's pretty easy to handle me here now, actually, if he just grabs a hold of me here. We both know what's going to happen here, basically. Later on in my career, I start to fake going into the breakdown and stay out of it. And the next thing, he has to turn around and look for you, and then he can't go to the breakdown. And the next thing, when he's looking for you, you go to the breakdown. And that was a different state of being. It was less emotional and more thoughtful. And so it's about recognising what emotion gives you as a player. And when it takes you too far and what the brain gives you then as against that. And I think the brain is the real one, really. You know, the brain is the real one you want because emotions will only take you so far, in my experience. You need the brain to switch on and take you to a new level of play.
And can you recognise that, both of you, from managing teams, on how to get different players to a different emotional pitch while at the same... Because it's not a one-size... fits all, and some players need one thing and others need another. How do you work that out?
I think a lot of players know, and if they don't know, then I think what way to prepare themselves for games. And I think the players that don't know, then you need to facilitate them and help them as to where they need to be. Like, I have worked with a number of teams. One team I work with, my own club, very much relayed on the emotional side of it. And I know that a lot of that has gone out of the game. And I know a lot of times, you know, you're not allowed to talk about it because it has to be more clinical. But I definitely still think there's room for that emotional side. I think the team I'm working with now, to be honest, completely went in and completely misread them. Walked on the emotional side of things and how absolutely the game we were going to be, and realised at half time of the first championship match that I need to seriously bring this back down a peg or two. And when you do, then you can see, you know, clear instructions, two, three things before a game, and these boys will prosper, you know. But I think it's just a matter of weighing up the teams and the individuals that you're dealing with, and where teams are coming from, where teams are coming from as far as, you know, where they are success wise, where they are in the ladder, you know, how many rungs they are from the top. And I think once you get your head around that, then you're in a much better place at knowing to what needs to be delivered before a game. But I still think, and I'll always think this, that never discount the emotional side, because that is a very, very important part. Because you take emotion out of sport and you make it as clinical as some people want to make it, then I don't think that as a team you can develop in the same way as a team that is in tune with what's going on emotionally.
Yeah, for sure. I'd agree with Oisin there. Like, it is fundamental. You'll never, you have to use it. You have to use it and accept it as part of your preparation, make the best of it. And I think it's a huge part of the team psychology and team, you know, sports psychology as well, is that the management of the emotional athlete, like, and the emotions of the group.
Do you think, though, for this to happen properly, you need a definite connection with the county or the team you're training to fully understand this, to fully develop this, to fully live in it? Or can you walk into a place and read it and develop it and be absolutely intimately involved in it?
I think you can. It's up to your research and your interest levels in the job and the county and the club. Absolutely. I was consumed with Wexford teams over the years, all their club teams, all their club championship games. I completely exhausted myself with club action. When the club action resumed last year, I managed to spend so many hours watching intermediate club games and junior club games and senior club games that I was, by the time it came to drive from Castlebar to Ferns, I was completely exhausted. And I had just the night before spent about 3 hours or 4 hours doing an analysis on three or four players that were playing in an intermediate quarterfinal. And discussing with them X, Y, and Z. And, you know, it's up to the individual and the interest you have in the job. If you love what you're doing, you're there to know as much as you can about the county and the clubs and the players. That would be my approach.
Is it the difficulty for you that it consumed you too much?
I think that is a challenge for me going forward, yeah.
Oisin?
Yeah, I think you have to have a work ethic. If you don't have a work ethic when it comes to management, I think players are more attuned. Their bullshit radar is more attuned than it's ever been. You won't get away with, falling short. Your preparation has to be good. You need to be on the pitch. You need to be there before everybody else. You need to leave, you know, after everybody else. You need to, that work ethic needs to be there. But also, I think, you know, when you talk about going into a different setup, a setup maybe that, you know, you don't have any emotional involvement with, I think if you go in and you try and fake that emotional involvement, but I think once you're in there, I think that develops and you start to learn about these people as individuals. You start to learn about the area that you're in. You start to learn a little bit about the history and different things. Yeah, and as that develops, then so too does your emotional attachment. Because one of the things I said when I was playing is that I would never manage anybody else other than Armagh Cross. Now that has changed dramatically because I dipped my toe in management when I went to DKT, to the college in Dundalk, and started meeting other individuals from different backgrounds. And I found college football a brilliant outlet for me. And we didn't take it too seriously because college football is college football. Gays are there to be educated, but they're also there to live out their life and have a good time and have a bit of fun. And I felt as if that's where the college football was at. But when I first went in, Paul, I was in the training ground an hour waiting for boys to come out. Now they come out in dribs and drabs. I think I had seven in the end. And what do you do with seven people? I had weighed it up completely wrong. I had weighed up what they needed. This was about, it was about me. When I went into taking that first training session, it was about me and how professional I was going to look and how I was going to take all of the things I'd learned, and I was going to try and fit them into one training session. you know what I mean, to really impress these boys. But what they needed was they needed to see somebody who, first of all, I didn't need to take them onto a training field. I needed to take them into a room and get to know them. I needed to, and once I was able to do that, then we could think about walking on things. But, you know, to just walk out on the training field, go, yeah, listen, lads, I'm here. We're ready to rock. Let's go with four laps and let's do a warm up and let's do. You need to get to know people when you go into a certain area, and say you need to get a feel for that, and you do, and you just need to be patient with that. First of all, when you go in there, you go, how am I ever going to remember these people's names? 2 weeks later, you know everybody. You know, when you're starting to get to know them then as individuals and who the characters are and all that sort of thing. So, it's definitely doable.
We're nearly done, but I want to ask both of you one last question. You both mentioned today, Oisin, you did it on several occasions, and Paul, you did it too, but you've also done it in the past. You've just talked about how you were wrong and how you've made mistakes and how you've learned from something. It's not always that you hear that from people who are at an elite level of sport and have come through a sport. Do you think that's an essential part of how you go about things, this idea of acknowledging failure or acknowledging being wrong?
I think you can't be self-righteous as a manager, like, you know, or as a coach, even as a person. Like, you can't go in with all the answers and expecting that everything you say is right and that everything you say will be the way. I think. You've got to be probably vulnerable at times. You've got to be, and I would have no issue ever to say, you know, if a thing was on me, I'd be the first to say it. And I think it's a strength actually to be able to do that.
I think that's something that I try to apply in life first and foremost in life, and football is an extension of my life, and sort of try and bring that into sport and into football. And I think, you know, that word that Paul used, vulnerability, like, you know what I mean? Like, players need to see that, you know, that you're vulnerable. Not that you're a wreck or anything, but that you're vulnerable at times, same as everybody else. And,
that you're willing to take the slack and take the heat or take responsibility if you feel it has got if you feel it's on you, that you're willing to say so. I think is that right, Oisin?
That just about sums it up, yeah.
Oisin, one last question actually. I do have one last question. Did you ever score 3-6 in a match? I'm not
first
talking about
half,
Darf.
First half of a match.
Probably.
And I was going 3-6 of that quality. Can we leave it at that?
He's not too bad, Clifford is he? He's not too bad.
We talked about work in progress at the start of the show, but he's certainly not. He's not in that category. He's there. He's arrived. And I think the brother being there didn't do him any harm whatsoever. I think he's a player too. But David Clifford at the weekend, taking bows on. Unbelievable.
Yeah, so thank you to Allianz for making the podcast happen. Thank you to Larry Ryan for running it, to Tony Lean, and everyone at Examiner Sport for making it happen as well. A huge thanks again to Oisin, and especially to Paul Galvin for giving us so much time this morning. It was a pleasure. Thank you.
Cheers, guys. Cheers, Oisin.
Allianz. Supporting all 32 counties through the Allianz Leagues.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.